Blog Talk Radio.
From the crossroads of the world, the capital city, Washington, D.C. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be, on the internet and around the world. I am your host, Lauren Cartagena. Thank you very much for joining us for another edition of Radio Pangea. It's been quite a day here in the United States. Donald J. Trump has become the 45th president of the United States of America. His official swearing-in was today, and he is now the leader of the free world. Yes, the free world has a new leader, Donald J. Trump. And with that, he's going to inherit a world of problems. Time will tell whether or not he's up for the task. But in the meantime, let us get to the story of Donald Trump and some other stories about previous presidents who at one point had total control of the military and of the economy and of the rest of the United States. Donald J. Trump took power as the 45th president of the United States on the pledge to end what he called the American carnage of rusted factories and crime, an inauguration address that was a populist and nationalist rallying cry. Striking a defiant tone, President Trump said American workers have been devastated by the outsourcing of jobs abroad. From this day forward, it's going to be America first, the Republican told thousands of people gathered on the National Mall to see him take over from Democratic President Barack Obama. With former President Obama and three other former presidents sitting nearby, President Trump accused previous U.S. administrations of enriching Washington at the expense of struggling American families, underscoring the deep division in the country. Protests against Trump turned ugly in downtown Washington this afternoon. Black-clad activists smashed windows, blocked traffic, and fought with police in riot gear, who responded with tear gas and stun grenades. Police said more than 200 people have been arrested. Aerial pictures of the crowd of Trump supporters on the mall showed a much smaller turnout at midday than in comparable photos from Obama's first inauguration in 2009. Estimates of Friday's crowd size were not immediately available for police. The inauguration address was vintage Donald Trump, with plenty of material gleaned from dozens of campaign rallies he staged the last year on the road to victory on November 8th over Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton, who attended the ceremony with her husband and former President Bill Clinton. Trump said the United States has enriched foreign industry at the expense of American companies, subsidized the armies of other countries while letting the U.S. military become depleted, dilapidated, and spent trillions abroad while allowing its infrastructure at home to completely crumble. Quote, the wealth of our middle class has been ripped from the homes and then redistributed across the entire world, he said. Trump accused the Washington establishment of protecting itself but abandoning regular citizens who have suffered from poverty and crime. This American carnage stops right here, right now, he said. Every decision on trade and taxes and immigration, foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. Trump, who is 70 years old, takes over a country deeply divided after a savage election campaign. The grim vision of America he often paints is believed by statistics showing low levels of unemployment and crime nationally. Although Trump won many votes in part of the nation where manufacturing has been hit badly. While Trump positioned himself as an American champion of working Americans, the Tax Policy Center, a nonpartisan think tank, estimates that his tax proposals would not only add $7.2 trillion in U.S. government debt over the first 10 years, but are skewed to help America's wealthiest. Hours after taking the oath of office, Trump, who repeatedly promised to repeal Obamacare, signed his first executive order directing U.S. agencies to delay, waive, or grant exceptions from any provisions of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, deemed burdensome for states and for individuals. Republicans in Congress hope to repeal the health care law and replace it soon. Sitting behind the presidential desk, Trump signed the order in a hastily arranged ceremony in the Oval Office, which Obama vacated in the morning. Gold drapes had already been hung in place of the crimson ones from the former president. Getting to our other news, what happens when a former president thinks not so highly of another country? We're talking about the one and only Richard Nixon. Yes. The North Koreans have been provoking the United States for as long as North Koreans have been praising Kim Il-sung for being birthed from a shooting star, supposedly. In the 1960s, the Hermit Kingdom, as it was called, was at the height of its power, which mostly came from the Soviet Union, who both supplied it and protected it from U.S. intervention. The election of U.S. President Richard Milhouse Nixon changed how communist nations interacted with the United States and in geopolitical affairs. Nixon, a staunch anti-communist Cold Warrior, was able to revoke the major communist powers and them off one another. His famous 1972 trip to China and the subsequent thaw in relations with the USSR are proof that Nixon's triangulation theory had merit. But in 1969, mere months into the first Nixon administration, Nixon's international savvy was still very unproven. That's when North Korea shot down an EC-121 spy plane over the Sea of Japan. Nixon was absolutely furious. A July 2010 story on NPR featured remarks from Bruce Charles, an Air Force pilot based in Kunsan, South Korea at the time. He recalled being put on alert to carry out his part of a SIOP, the Singular Integration Operation Plan, the United States nuclear strike plan for war with the communists. Charles was put on alert to drop a 330-kiloton nuclear warhead on the Korean airstrip. Eventually, the order was to stand down was given, and Charles returned to his regular duties. According to the official accounts, President Nixon and his advisors mulled over how to respond. In the end, President Nixon opted not to retaliate. It's worth speculating that Nixon would have wanted the communists to believe he actually considered a nuclear strike. In the coming years, the president would even send nuclear-armed bombers toward the Soviet Union while spreading the rumor that he was so insane he might really trigger World War III. Of course, he wasn't insane. And thanks to a 2000 book by Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, we know he was just drunk. Not with power, but with booze. That's right. George Carver, a CIA Vietnam specialist at the time of the EC-121 shootdown, is reported to have said that Nixon became incensed when he found out that the EC-121 plane was missing. The president got off the phone with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and ordered planes for a tactical nuclear strike and recommendations for his target. Then Henry Kissinger, National Security Advisor for Nixon, also got on the phone to the Joint Chiefs and got them to agree to stand down on that order until Nixon woke up sober the next morning. In other news, speaking of the military, the U.S. Army awarded Sig Sauer a contract of $580 million to make the next service pistols based on the company's P320 handgun. Sig Sauer beat out Glock Incorporated, FN, and Beretta, the maker of the current M9 9mm service pistol, in competition for a modular handgun system. Quote, "We are both humbled and proud that the P320 was selected by the U.S. Army as its weapon of choice," said Ron Cohen, chief executive officer for Sig Sauer. Securing this contract is a testimony to Sig Sauer's employees, their commitment to innovation and quality in manufacturing the most reliable firearms in the world. The Army launched its long-awaited XM-17 MHS competition rifle in late August of 2015 to replace its Cold War-era M9 9mm pistol. "By maximizing full potential and open competition across our industry partners, we have optimized private sector advancements in handguns, ammunition, and magazines. And in the end, we'll resort in a decidedly superior weapon system for our warrior and fighters," said the Army Acquisitions Executive Stephanie Easter in a press release. One of the major goals of the effort was to adapt a pistol chambered for a more potent round than the current 9mm. The U.S. military replaced a 45 caliber 9/11 pistol with a M9 in 1985 and began using the 9mm NATO round at the same time. In their statement, the Army and Sig Sauer officials didn't specify what caliber the new Sig Sauer pistol would use, But the SIG does tout the P320 model product as a modular and adaptable, meaning that it can convert anywhere between a 9mm and a 357 SIG or a 40 SIG SGW, from that caliber size to pistol size. So the grip fits best suited for the shooter. The P320 is the most adaptable pistol available today, and the company says in promotional materials that two sources have confirmed that military officials have submitted to the Army the 40 caliber and 9mm pistols for consideration. Moving on to our other news, and this is our Native American Homefront news. We are joined by Dr. Laura Williams on our special inaugural edition. Dr. Laura Williams is a family medicine doctor. She is the first California Native American female physician to be awarded and granted a medical license after attending medical school at Tufts University in Boston. She is also a graduate from University of Southern California and has also been a Robert Johnson Fellow, in addition to being a doing a residency program at Glendale Adventist Medical Center. And so we are very excited to have Dr. Williams here. We are interested in having her be a part of our continuing reporting staff, and we're looking to bring her on board this year as our chief medical correspondent. So, Dr. Williams, without any further ado, thank you very much for joining us today. I know that you wanted to present some material to our listening audience. You mentioned that you were interested in your elections, your tribal elections. You are a member of the Wanaino Ahashman Tongva tribe, which is in Southern California. Specifically, it is the coastal part of Southern California in Orange County, for those of you that are familiar with the area. Dr. Williams has been a longtime advocate of indigenous rights, and she is here today to talk to us about elections in her tribal area and what her tribe can expect in the near future. So thank you very much, Dr. Williams, for being here. Please tell us what it is that you would like to speak about today.
Well, I'm happy today on the election and the final swearing in of Donald J. Trump. And I'm, as a physician, I believe that our future is bright in regards to restructuring of the Affordable Care Act. In addition, my most greatest concern as a member of the Wanaino Band of Mission Indians, Ahashman Nation, and a descendant of the Gambrelino Tongva, is our own election process that will take place tomorrow, January 21st, in San Juan Capistrano at our tribal hall. It's very important that all our tribal members come out to participate, that our role members, to vote for the slate of their choice. And I particularly wanted to bring us up to date in regards to the slate. I have been reviewing the slate and who is available for election. It's very important that our tribal council, our leader, is educated, particularly in the area of education. And we have a leader who is to be elected with great hope, Richard Rodman, and as well as the rest of his tribal council. He is up against the slate that is currently in the position, which is Teresa Romero. And I believe that our tribe needs to be led by the first doctorate, actually a first leader who will hold a doctorate. He has an EDD. And he is prepared to educate our community and is particularly interested in developing our youth as future leaders of our tribe. And given the role of the leader, it is to set forth the goals, objectives, and, of course, the vision of our tribe. Our past tribal chair, Teresa Romero, has done the best job that she can, given her current level of education and experience. Our previous tribal chair, Anthony Rivera, who is a Harvard-educated theologist and he brought us forth on federal recognition, I believe, that the Slate Dream Team, as they're called, to be led by Richard Monument, will be an excellent choice for our future to bring our youth into the future, as well as our communities in relationship to the health care of our people and social service needs. I believe he has an excellent background to do so with a body of work in the area of education. There are other members on the Dream Team slate, including Chase Resnick, who is interested in data collection, who has a background in that, as well as a background in business. So we're looking forward to our tribal elections tomorrow, along with what we experienced in November and what we saw today. And I believe that this particular leader can go along with Donald Trump's initiative of business and education and lead us into the future. So I'm hoping that this is what will be the best choice for tomorrow. So thank you for inviting me today to speak on our tribal elections, the one annual band of Mission Indians.
Anytime, Dr. Williams, and we look forward to having you as our chief medical correspondent throughout the year and in future episodes. So with that, thank you very much from the capital city of Washington, D.C. Thank you very much for listening to Radio Pangea. I am Lauren Cartagena. We hope to catch you again on another edition. Until then, please, as always, think for yourself.